Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law you watch me cover on WGN television every day into the world of theater and arts and more fun, one would argue, certainly these days. Anyway, joining me, this is one of my favorite shows. I love this show, and we get the two leads from the show. Little Shop of Horrors is playing up at Music Theater Works in Skokie. It's a short run. It's only a few weekends, but joining me, Seymour himself, Jimmy Hogan, and also Audrey to herself. I guess it's Audrey. Kayla Shipman joined me. Hi, guys. So good to see you. I love this show.
Hi. Yes, I do too. It's one of my all-time favorites.
I agree.
Neither of you have been in this show. I mean, I know your bios, but I didn't. This has not been done by either of you before, right?
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Jimmy, this is not your first appearance at Music Theater Works. You've done a lot. I saw you in Avenue Q there. Absolutely loved that show where you were Princeton. And you and I should have appeared together. They actually offered me the role in White Christmas of General Waverly. And I can't make that work.
You passed out on a great time, Paul. We had a great time during that show.
Oh, we could have been backstage and having fun and doing things we shouldn't do and eat and all that kind of stuff. Would have been great.
It would have been awesome.
And Kayla, I know this is your debut.
Yes.
But you were recently in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil at Goodman.
I sure was.
Oh, my. That's going to, will you go to Broadway with it if it goes there?
Well, you know, that is the hope. We have not heard anything just yet. I know they just announced, but they haven't announced the theater or really the time of year next year. So it's still all kind of up in the air, but that is the goal. So fingers crossed.
Well, it was unbelievable. I got to an interview with Austin and I tried to get Jay in there, but trying to get Jay was not an easy thing to do. And of course, you know, Austin left you and 5 minutes later was back in The Great Gatsby on Broadway.
Yes. Yes, I know. He's been all over the place. He's so talented.
Those kind of careers should be illegal. Anyway, thank you for joining me. We're going to talk about Little Shop of Horrors. I have a surprise for you, Jimmy.
Oh.
So this is, I mean, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So... Now, I know, I don't know what you think. I mean, yes, these are from Little Shop of Horrors, but I know you see the tape there.
Yes.
These were Darren Criss's glasses in Little Shop of Horror. And what Darren did was he put a piece of tape on the front that said, "Don't feed the plants."
Work. Oh, that's incredible. So cool.
So I would love to lend you these for the show, but you'd have to wear the tape because I'm not taking that off.
No, that's iconic. You got to keep that. Oh, my God. But thank
you. Yeah, I wanted to. Can I have your glasses when the show was over with a piece of
absolutely,
tape?
Absolutely. They are totally yours.
I love it. Hey, Kayla, for people who don't know what this show is, I don't know how you've lived this long and not know what Little Shop of Horrors is about, but let's assume some don't. Give us a bit about the plot of the show, which goes, I think I first saw it in the 80s off Broadway somewhere in New York.
Yeah. Well, basically, it follows along this group of people in Skid Row, you know, the slums of New York. And Seymour works at this floral shop that's run by Mr. Mushnick. And Audrey also works at the shop. And Seymour has...
Shout out, by the way, to Thomas Shea, because he's a phenomenal... I haven't seen him do this yet. I'm going to come this weekend. But he was, made for this role.
Oh, mm-hmm. You are in for a treat. He is absolutely perfect in this role. So Ed Seymour has an interest in strange and unusual plants. And one day he comes upon the Audrey too. And you're in for a treat. We highlight all the horror aspects in the show. This is a man-eating plant, mm-hmm. and you're along for the ride. But that's pretty much the synopsis of it. I don't want to give too much away.
No, and by we'll talk about the music separately, because the music is the best in this. Alan Menken, Howard Ashman, I mean, just amazing. And Ashman, who died way too young. Menken, who I sponsored his concert at the Auditorium Theater a couple of years ago. And he's just an amazing guy. But for this, so Jimmy, the challenge here is that I do think a lot of people know this show. Either they've seen the movie with Rick Moranis, or, you know, they've seen it on Broadway, or it traveled. It was actually done not all that long ago at Mercury. They did the show as well. So I'm sort of curious, how do you see Jeff? I have Rick Moranis is who stays in my head, maybe because of the movie, the nerdy Seymour, whatever. How do you play Seymour?
I kind of have made the decision that I just want to stick to what the truth of the character is. When I started developing the character of Seymour, I immediately went to the kind of the trope, the meekness of it. And but Kyle really stopped me in that and said from the beginning, he didn't.
Kyle Dugan, your director.
Yes, our director, Kyle Dugan. And he immediately stopped me in that and be like, I don't want you to go for like kind of the stereotypes that we see about Seymour. I just want you to play it for the truth of what the dialogue is. And I have found a lot of excellence in that. I find I don't need to do anything with my voice particularly. I do think there's a physicality with it because I am a very tall Seymour. I'm 6'3", so that's a very, very tall Seymour. So there is kind of a physicality that I kind of try to do that I hope tries to evolve in the show when he gets more confident in himself to like straighten up a little bit. And I just find that when I didn't rely a lot on the tropes of what I thought Seymour would be, I found more of who Seymour really is. And it just has been an incredible experience to play a part that I have always really, this is one of the dream roles that I've wanted to play.
So it sounds like you are not being influenced by, and some of the more, you know, I talked about, you know, some of these older players, but we do have Darren Criss and others. It's still around. People still doing it. Sounds like you weren't really influenced by that. You were making with Kyle's help making this your own.
Yeah. I didn't really. It's so funny throughout this whole experience, I haven't really gone back and looked at anything. That's just something that I just typically, I just am not interested in doing. This is my opportunity to bring life to this role, and I want to do it in my own way. So I didn't really need to draw on anything except the dialogue in the book, really, to tell me what to do and help me form this character.
Well, Kayla, given what you've said and how you define that, that leads me to want to ask Kayla the same question, because of course Ellen Green, who is so infamous for playing this role, even in the movie, I mean, usually, typically, whoever plays it on or off Broadway doesn't do the movie. They go find, Ellen's like, no, I'm doing this. And so she is Audrey, from beginning to end. That's who's in my head. What about you? Did you see Ellen do this role in one version or another? And how were you? Did Kyle give you the same advice?
Yeah, no, of course. I grew up watching the film as well. It's one of my favorites. So yeah, you have that image stuck in your head. Agreed with Jimmy, just sticking to the text. And I really wanted to keep Audrey as genuine as possible, because, you know, there are those moments where it can be, you know, this show is camp and it's over the top. But I feel like specifically Audrey and Seymour are the two characters in the show that have these heartfelt, genuine moments. So just sticking with that and being honest and truthful and really, really relying on that in the text, it has, you know, helped me to discover these, you know, characteristics of her, while also, you know, keeping it true to myself and making it my own. To say that I'm not influenced by Ellen Green and, you know, the multiple others who have played Audrey, of course I am. But I definitely think I've kept it true to myself and brought my own to this role.
Yeah.
So
no doubt. And by the way, I'm sort of curious, have either of you seen, you probably know, this didn't start as the musical, it started as a film with Jack Nicholson years ago. Have either of you ever seen that?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh, no, not the old film.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. We need to see it.
I know.
And it's different and all that, but it's just, again, people just know this as the musical that it is, but it actually started elsewhere. See, for me, it's like, I wouldn't even want to sit through this without that music that goes on that's so magnificent. So let me have you talk about that, Jimmy. I mean, just even if you did this show in concert, that it's still worth coming to see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I find it always a real treat when I get to sing songs that I just know are iconic, just in American culture. And Little Shop of Horrors has such, I forget sometimes how great the music is until you're in it. So singing songs like Grow For Me, or even what me and Kayla sing together, Suddenly Seymour. I mean, it just, every time I sing songs like that, I just get goosebumps about and pinch myself the fact that I'm doing such an iconic show. And I just think that speaks to the genius of Howard Ashford and Alan Menken and like the great job they did. It's such an amazing score that has lasted for years and years and years.
And Caleb, of course, you get the Somewhere That's Green number, which is just so amazing.
She's amazing in that song, by the way. Just saying, she's amazing in that song.
I can't wait. But a lot of this music takes us back to sort of the 60s flavor with the three ladies and all that. Sort of curious as you got to know this music as well, was this, how do you compare this in terms of genre? I mean, what you did at the Goodman, for example, in Midnight of Garden Evil, a little bit of a different sort of tone in the music there. What, do you have a favorite genre that plays when you're doing music theater?
Oh, I mean, I really am such a sucker for contemporary musical theater. So, you know, doing Midnight was a dream because I love anything that Jason Robert Brown creates. But I mean, even, you know, Alan Menken is, I would consider Howard, you know, both of them to be contemporary musical theater. And that's, I feel like that's exactly what this is. But Somewhere That's Green is more of a classic musical theater song, but then you get a taste of these, like, I don't know if retro is the correct word.
Well, the Little Shop of Horrors theme. I mean, that's
yeah. Everything vibe. That the urchins sing, and oh, just wait until you hear Najee sing Audrey too. I mean, it is just it gives me goosebumps. It's
And Kayla, I'll stay with you. The show itself can be described, I think, as kind of campy. So, is this directed by Kyle? Will we get that campiness, or is he? I mean, I'm still stuck with what Jimmy said, which is where Jimmy said be true to the lyrics. Where Kyle said that to Jimmy. So, I'm wondering, do we get the campiness, or did Kyle direct you away from that?
I'd say you get a little bit of both. I think there are some campy aspects to it that we've kept, but then you also get more of this. Really highlighting these horror aspects of it as well. And then really keeping the Audrey and Seymour moments genuine just to kind of give it some dynamic. But yeah, I think this take on the production is going to be a real treat. And the audience is, I think they will love it. I'm so excited.
And Jimmy, you get to play with puppets. I don't know how much, whether any of this is supposed to be secret, whatever, but I'll let you fill us in to the extent you can, because Audrey grows. And yeah. So we start from little Audrey 2, I should say, and you know, to more Audrey 2. What can you tell us about the puppetry or the Audrey models that we get to see?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have one puppet that I work.
You're used to playing with puppets.
Yeah. I'm very used to the puppet game, as we know. But I only have one that I play with in one scene. Alex is our big Audrey 2 puppeteer. And he does the smallest one where he'll be controlling that through his hand. And then he has what we call pod 3, where he's literally going to be like sitting cross-legged on a stool, bending himself like forward like this and that. He's literally bent over the entire time doing this. And then we have biggest pod 4, the biggest Audrey, where I don't know how to, I don't want to say anything without spoiling it, but there's a chance that we get to talk about, because the way he has to position himself standing inside the puppet for certain things to happen in the show, it is phenomenal. And that's just a credit. Alex hasn't really a lot of public experience before this, I believe. I don't want to speak for him. And he has done such an incredible job at bringing the plants to life. I mean, he is constantly, when we're running stuff, he is constantly in the corner of the room running, even miming puppetry for the plants. So I really, really am excited for people to see all the work that Alex did. And I just want to give him props because he has worked so hard to bring these plants to life. And it's going to be a treat for everybody to see.
Is he also the amazing voice behind Audrey?
No, that is Najee, and who also is just an incredible performer. I mean, I second what Kayla said. When you hear Najee sing, you are just going to be floored. And not to leave out China, Michaela, and Kiana, our three urchins, too. I mean,
right.
Their blend, their tone is spectacular. It's just so good.
Well, that's where the 60s Supremes comes in.
Yes, exactly.
And we have a small cast, so I just want to shout out Sam, who plays Oren slash he plays multiple different roles, mainly Oren in the show. You are going to be, though, he brings a different aspect on stage every time he's there. So, I mean, there's something that everybody is going to love.
Yeah, I love this. When I met Howard, when I met Alan Menken, this is the score I picked to have him sign. Was this show, because I just think it is just so amazing. So, Kayla, can I go dark with you for a moment?
Sure.
You know, again, when the show was written, which is a long time ago, there didn't seem to be as much sensitivity. Maybe there was, but to some of the issues that come up. And so in here, when we talk about Oren, your boyfriend, the dentist, a very funny role. But at the same time, I'm sort of curious, was there a discussion with Kyle, with the cast, about handling the issues that today those relationship dynamics now give us? The reaction is different today than it would have been in the 80s.
Oh, of course. Obviously it's a very touchy.
And I'll let you describe, again, I don't want to give anything away. So if you want to talk about the relationship between you and Oren, to the extent you choose to.
Oh, yeah, of course. But Kyle and I had talked about, there has to be some sense of love between Oren and Audrey, or I don't think they would be in the situation they were to begin with. Now, I know, love can be such a broad term, and especially considering the circumstances between the two of them. But we did kind of want to stick to that. So there is some sense of, oh, well, she's in this relationship for a reason, but, also with, the violence and whatnot. We tried to keep it as tame, I guess, is the proper word. So it's not as aggressive and in your face. Because, mm-hmm. I feel like in the script, it's there, the way he speaks to her.
Oh, you can't avoid it.
Yeah, you can't. Kyle and our intimacy coordinator and fight choreographer did a wonderful job of, making us feel comfortable in the room and, speaking about boundaries and making sure that we were in a safe space to discuss, that topic and working through movement and things like that.
And the, I'm just losing my note, the actor who plays Oren.
Sam.
Sorry?
Sam.
Sam. So I'm sort of curious, have you talked to Sam, or just in character, part of preparation for the show? Have you guys sat and talked about, let's talk about a relationship, what this is, and that there is an underlying love here? I mean, did the intimacy coordinator have you sort of, let's chat about this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We definitely did a deep dive into that and basically our backstories of how we got to where we were. So all of that, yes, was discussed and developed and, we came to a mutual understanding of how, we connect on stage. And I think you all are really in for a treat.
Oh, no doubt. And Jimmy, this show is usually played, again, in its different iterations through the years. It's usually smaller theaters. There's sort of an intimate effect to this show, or feeling about this show, the small orchestra and all of that, even at Mercury. I mean, but this is different. Well, actually, let me ask you, are you in the Avenue Q smaller theater, or are you in the biggie? Yeah.
We're in the smaller theater.
Makes sense. Okay. And so you're used to that because you played Princeton in that theater. That actually gives you more of a chance to have a connection with the audience, doesn't it, in that theater?
Absolutely. I feel, we talked about it, actually. I think one of the reasons they did in the 2003 Broadway revival, one of the main complaints that some people had about that, not crapping on any of the actors, but because it was in such a big theater, you lost a lot of the intimacy that comes with it. I think Little Shop is a very intimate show. You would not think it is because it's about a man eating plant, but I feel you lose a lot of the heart and even the horror of what is going on stage when everything is so far away. And I also think there is a craftiness to the show where, no one wants to, I don't think people really want to see an overly animated life like Audrey too. I think there is a craftiness in and of Little Shop in itself where people like to see the puppetry close. I think that's what makes it more special for them. So I'm very, very glad this is happening in the North Theater, because I think it speaks to a lot of essence of what the show is.
And Kayla, without giving anything away about the ending, but just in terms of the staging, the scenery, and what we see, because I have memories on Broadway of how things ended and what it is that you see. Will we have, and I realize our viewers are going, what the heck is he talking about? But you know what I'm talking about. So what is the impact of what we sort of, the feel, the see at the end of this show?
Oh, the audience will be immersed in the world. You will be a part of the world and we will be in your face.
Okay. That's all they need to know.
That's all you need to know.
Jimmy, why does this show have such staying? So many of the shows you actually have done have this staying power thing. What is it about Little Shop? Is it the music? Is it the story? I mean, what is it that keeps this just going and going and people? And
I think a lot.
Darren Criss says, "I'll do it."
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the music. I also think I was thinking about this earlier. There is something to be said about a lovable villain. I like to call it the Disney villain. And Disney villains, they're not good people. They're not good people. They don't want, it's not like they're doing this from misguided. No, they're bad people. But because they're so over the top, people love them. I mean, freaking Maleficent is saying this girl's going to die because I wasn't invited to her baby shower. I mean, right. That is like iconic.
That's reason enough to kill right there.
Exactly. So I think the campiness of Little Shop is what makes it stick around. I think the music, and I think just the fact that people look forward to seeing, they love the Disney villain, as I call it, the lovable villain who isn't good, but they're so over the top and they're written so well that you just can't help but come to see the plan. And then on top of that, just a genuine love story about two people born into poverty, the low of life, trying to find a way to work their way out of it. And I think that's very relatable in that, I mean, the second song on the show is called Skid Row. And it's a very relatable thing where everybody is just so stuck in their rut and there's just no hope of getting out of here. And I think the question of what would each of us do, how far each of us would go to have the opportunity to get out of what situation we're ever in and make our life better. I think that's an eternal question that everybody wonders, that Little Shop puts to the audience very well.
That's a great point, because you're right. Skid Row really is just it's just a way of representing lots of challenges, lots of things that people feel and have. And we can make a lot of comparisons to it, to things going on in the country and the world today. So people sort of see it that way. I think that's pretty powerful. Who do you, by the way, the Disney villain, in my mind, I'm actually kind of thinking, who are you referring to as that Disney villain in the case, in the show?
Oh, I'm the plan, Audrey too.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you meant Audrey, or
because I mean Oren too.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean Oren too. Yeah, Oren too. Oren is as well to an extent. I just think it's...
maybe Seymour, if you want to think about it.
Hey, that's open to interpretation. I mean,
and by the way, it's important that we love Seymour, right?
It is very important. I mean, for me, I think Seymour, I never thought of Seymour as dumb. I just think Seymour has been told his entire life that he's not good enough. And unfortunately, the tragic part of Seymour is that he is his lack of self-confidence. And by the time, not to give any too much away, but by the time Seymour fully gets the confidence that he needs, it's too late. So I think for me, Seymour's a very tragic character, and he has throughout his entire life, he's told that he's never good enough, and he just can't get him. His tragedy is that he can't get himself to the point where he's like, I don't need to do all these things to be a fully realized person. And that's the sad part about Seymour. By the time he does realize that we are beyond the point, we're past the point of no return.
Yeah, I interviewed Larry Yando a couple of weeks ago, who's playing always the villain roles. Larry, well, of course, mm-hmm. he's been Scrooge for 16 years at Goodman, but he was Uncle Scar on Broadway and in Lion King, and now he's got some of these evil kinds of people in Harry Potter. But I talked to him about playing those evil roles. I mean, as an actor, isn't that depressing? You know, when every role you play, and for him, pretty much every role you play is the guy that's going to get booed by the audience. And Larry said, "Oh no, I love getting booed." He goes, "That's the point. I'm nothing like those characters, so for me, I love it."
He's doing his job. Well,
yeah, he's an amazing actor. I just love him. Yeah. Kayla, talk about Audrey too, because Audrey also. How would you describe her? Is she strong?
No, I think Seymour, well, to an extent, I guess. Let me rephrase that. I think she's similar to Seymour in a way, and this is why they bond so well and develop this love. She is very insecure, and she believes that she doesn't deserve all of these wonderful things in life, and Seymour brings, you know, this goodness out of her and makes her realize that she does deserve love and she does deserve a better life. And that I think that there's just something so sweet about Audrey because she tries so hard. She tries so hard to be loved in the way that, you know, she dresses, the way she comes off. She, you know, she is a people pleaser. She tries to do everything right. And I think she finally gets, you know, that glimmer of hope in Seymour.
Jimmy, you tend to play lighthearted, nice, lovable kinds of characters. I'm just thinking of recent roles that you've done, even Phil in White Christmas. I mean, mm-hmm. you're just the guy that the audience goes, I like that guy. is that who Jimmy Hogan is? Or would you say, oh, no, I'll give me Scar on Broadway. I'll push Larry Ando right off the stage and take over that. Mean uncle thing right there.
I would never be on a post-Lady Villain. I'll tell you, the final role I played in college was I played a member of the KKK in the Larry, I think it was, if I get the playwright wrong, it's the play The Foreigner. I think that's by Larry Shue. I believe that's by Larry Shue. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But I've played roles like that, but I don't know. Maybe I have a lovable face. I don't really know. But I think it is a testament to who I am. But trust me, I am not opposed to going on stage and getting booed. I love it too. I get what Larry is saying. It's a
good. I will boo you then in the curtain call.
Good. Good. Although I did a good job if you're booing me, Paul. Right. I'll appreciate
but
that.
If I do it, I'll probably be close to the front and I'll give you a smile and a wave. So.
Work. Awesome. Thank you.
And by the way, one of the things I also saw is I did look at your bios while I was some familiar, but Kayla, you guys both went to Indiana.
We did.
What's in the water in Indiana producing these wonderful character portrayers?
Hey, you know, it was a great program. We had wonderful professors and.
Did you know each other? Were you there at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
Jimmy and I played opposites of each other 10 years ago.
I love it. What show?
Legally Blonde.
Oh, mm-hmm. My God. I love it.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with the casting here, right? I mean, it wasn't like one of you recommended the other. You just both got cast?
Oh, I remember walking into our callback and we were like,
ah! It was amazing.
And Kai was like, do you all know each other? And we were like, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So did you have the lead in Legally Blonde, Kayla?
I did.
Of course, because, yeah, I can see that. Jimmy, who are you in Legally Blonde?
I was Emmett in Legally Blonde.
Okay. And so, by the way, so when you went to school, I mean, did you, I'm sort of curious, you because I think you got the, Kayla, I think you got a BFA, am I right?
Yes, I did.
Oh, and actually, Jimmy, you did too. So you both had your BFA. So you were in a lot of classes doing all sorts of things together all through those years.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. We were in the same program. Jim, am I just a year older than you? 2 years.
I think you're 2 years.
2 years.
When I was a freshman.
Yeah.
Good for you, Kayla, for admitting it, that you're older.
Well, you know, I'll be honest.
She looks great. She looks fantastic.
Because I'm younger.
Okay. Exactly.
I went to University of Illinois where, while I didn't take theater, we did something called, it was in the communication department, but it's oral interpretation. So my performance back then was like you'd perform poems or you'd perform books. You would perform that kind of stuff and bring them to life, which is sort of an interesting challenge, except for once where we performed a Brady Bunch episode. But that's the other one. So the show runs through November 17th, Jimmy, and that's not a long run. But you've done a lot at Music Theater Works. I always wish those runs there were longer.
I do too. I mean, you know what? Those are things that the powers above have more control over than I do. But trust, if we could get an extension, I think that I wish this show could run longer than it is. It's going to be a freaking phenomenal show.
And Kayla, this is your first time at Music Theater Works. So are you loving the space that you're in, the theater? I mean, I got to be honest. It's such a treat. I can go out there and have dinner nearby Hackney's if you haven't been there yet. And get the Hackney burger, get the onion loaf. If you don't know
that onion loaf. Yes.
Onion loaf. And, but also parking. There's a lot. It's like, we're not in Chicago anymore.
Right. Yes. No, it's a beautiful space. I love this smaller theater as well. I haven't been into the larger one yet. But it's an intimate space. Again, like you said, parking, there's a million places nearby to eat. Yeah, the space is incredible.
I'm just loving it. And by the way, subscribers can go upstairs to the Broadway Lounge during the show. I don't know what the food is. Is it good food?
I don't know. I haven't had it.
All right.
I haven't.
Okay. The show is running through November 17th, North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. Tickets at musictheaterworks.com. Little Shop of Horrors, one of the greatest musicals ever. Thank you so much for your time, guys. I look forward to seeing you Saturday night, and I'll boo you, Jimmy.
Yes, can't wait.
And break legs every night. You're part of a great show. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you.